Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we have the great Dan Dunn come in here, and we really get into some high-grade whiskeys. And, oh, man, is this stuff good. Well, so we'll really get you coached up on what to get, especially around the holidays and at what price point and all that kind of stuff. Funny show because people caught a little buzz. I think that's safe to say. Mark Joseph, our producer from Those Safe Spaces, also calls in, gives us a little lesson about growing up in Japan. First, Dos Equis. That's right. And a word from Martellus Bennett. He's a professor at the Dos Equis College Football College. Take it away, Martellus.
Hey, college football fans. Martellus Bennett here. Do you want to win every football argument this season? Dominate every debate? Become a pigskin prodigy? Then enroll in a Dos Equis College Football College, where you'll learn from football insiders like me, Jay Cutler, Katie Nolan, and author John Bacon, the man who wrote the book on college football. So be the first in your family to earn a football watching certificate from a beer school. Enroll in Dos Equis College Football College at dosequis.com/edu.
Finally, there's a football beer school for me. Thanks, Martellus. And Dawson?
Enjoy Dos Equis responsibly. Imported by Cervezas Mexicanas, White Plains, New York. Copyright 2019. Dos Equis Beer Brands, official beer sponsor of the college football playoff. The holidays are around the corner. It's time to drink too much, eat too much, and fight about Trump at the dinner table. Luckily, we've got just what you need to make the most of this most wonderful time of the year. Introducing the Corolla Christmas Stocking. The custom embroidered stocking is adorned with the hand-knit word, acehole, sewed on by talented elves and or children from the Orient. What's inside? Glad you asked. With your purchase of the Corolla Christmas Stocking, you'll get an ACS Nativity Scene t-shirt featuring Max Apata as Baby Jesus and Adam as Mother Mary, a custom Happy Birthday Jesus ornament, 4 Corolla Drinks wine glasses, plus 2 bottles of your choice, all for only $99. And for those who want to go big for the holiday season, you can also purchase the Stocking Scrapbook Combo for only $175. Get the stocking and the 10 years of ACS scrapbook, signed by the entire network for the ultimate Corolla fan in your life. So get to CorollaDrinks.com today and get ready. The holidays are coming. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Dan Dunn. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, No Space Safe Spaces producer Mark Joseph calls in, and Gary Smith fills in for good sports. And now, Jim Carolla's pride and joy, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on it, man. Did you get it on, man? Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Hey, Bald Brian.
I thought that was a ball cock.
We will take a deep dive into some, I don't know, are we doing whiskeys or scotch? Or
whiskeys, American whiskeys.
Mm. Delicious
Dan
whiskeys.
Dan is awesome, so we'll give you our feelings on that in a second. Let's see. Yeah, speaking of my dad and pride of joy, I think I did buy him a trumpet, for those of you who
People were curious.
I bought him a
very nice trumpet.
A nice trumpet.
What constitutes a nice trumpet?
A free one from your fucking son.
Thick brass.
The guy who sold to Adam's actually a very good trumpet player too, so he knows what they're looking for.
Now do I splurge and get him the valve oil too?
You gotta take care of it.
Another six bucks, you know?
Might as well go all in.
I was kind of thinking about it though, but it's also could be an eerie harbinger, you know. Like my dad asked me to buy him trumpet for 5 years. I finally bought it to him. Put it in his casket. You know what I mean?
I finally bought you that trumpet, Pop.
That's right. Now I'm playing taps. All right. So I got that. More NFL kicks going over the top of the goalpost.
Great.
Driving me insane.
Cool.
Driving me insane. And again, it could be remedied if they'd raise them up, but it also could be remedied if they'd get a camera angle on it. I can't tell. I can't see anything. I was sitting with Mike Lynch at a Mexican food restaurant on Sunday night. It was like just one of these things where they had the TV on behind the bar kind of thing. And I was like, did they just kick one over the top of the stupid thing again? Like, when is this
going
to end?
Yeah. What? I was thinking about that with the kicks going over, and I'm like, this is the perfect bit for you because, like, the kicks go over, you scream about it, they eventually raise it after, you know, 4 or 5 years of screaming, but the kickers get bigger and stronger. Right. And it's like, oh, this is self perpetuating.
Well, what I realized is I was talking to Lynch because Lynch is a world class therapist now. I mean, he's a really insightful. He's an insightful guy. You don't talk. I don't know if people really know that I really have an interest in the human condition. I'm very interested in that subject. And terms of giving the devil his due, my dad has a gift in that. Doesn't apply it to anybody he knows. But my dad has a good understanding of psychology and the sort of condition and why and what. And he's a very thoughtful person that way. And I've always been thoughtful that way and interested that way. Just what makes people work and why do they do it? And
why do they do things that are not in their interest?
And or in their interest, and how do people motivate? And then also, why isn't this subject more interesting to people when you kind of consider it?
It's one thing we all have in common.
It's like everyone has an interest in money.
Yep.
Many people don't have an education on how to get it or save it or make it or any of it. But it's so ubiquitous and you need it. And I feel this way about psychology. Like, it's such an important subject. Why is it like considered some niche thing that nobody really wants to get involved with or educate themselves on or what have you? But Mike Lynch is a super thoughtful guy. And he's also very engaged in this type of thinking. So when we go out and have conversations, inevitably we just sort of talk about this and where we're at, what people do, and how kids work, and how whatever, and the different motivations of all our God's creatures. And I point out that, you know, he's at my house for a few days. I was like, you notice Phil sits outside of the kitchen when Olga's in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. But when I'm in the kitchen, Phil lays on top of me, you know, and how she's trained him and so on and so forth. But I talked to him about, like, why do we do so many things that don't make sense as humans when we kind of make the rules? You know, again, the click it or ticket up on the sign. And, you know, he was saying to me something funny, which is, I said, if everyone has something inside their car that drives them insane, with chimes going off and things being flashing on their dash, what do we need to click it or ticket for? And he said, I take my backpack sometimes, and when I'm driving home from work, I'll set my backpack on the passenger seat, and the car thinks,
registers,
and I can't drive without having a seizure. I'm going nuts now with all this chimes going off, so he'll put the seatbelt on his backpack. Because his car dashboard is going off. And I'm like, yes, so why are we putting that on a sign? And we'll have these discussions. We have the Ravens Raiders kick, by the way.
We have both. We have both kicks. So.
Oh, sorry.
So we'll start with the Raiders kick. This is actually Cousin Sal, I think, at your warehouse.
Yes.
Narrating.
No, he wasn't there on Sunday.
Okay.
Raiders attempting to kick the snap. Kick, it's up. Can't tell if it's in, but
it's no good, obviously.
Definitely thinks it's good.
Looked a little good, but
they're kind of celebrating.
We'll never know.
They give each other a job well done.
We don't have an angle. We can't ever figure it out. There's in a game that replays guys' feet going out of bounds with just a playing card thickness worth of green in between the white out of bounds.
There's cameras in the pylons.
There's cameras everywhere. Everything. You can see the last minute the ball slipped out just before they'll freeze it. It's just before his knee touched the ground. The ball got
ball's
loose.
Moving. That ball's moving.
Right.
But why can't they put it directly behind each post?
Here's what I'm saying. When we're at the meeting with the competition committee or the rules or whatever we're having at some Mar-a-Lago and every year and, you know, and someone is going, you know, look, last year the nacho cheese was 40% Havarti and I'm going to just stand up on the table and start screaming. Why can we fix this goddamn It's a field goal. It's big points. You can win or lose. The Patriots have won every Super Bowl by a field goal. Every single one they've won. Won or lost by a field goal. Every single time the Patriots play in the Super Bowl, they win or lose by a field goal. Do we not want to correct this super correctable thing? It is so correctable. Also, can we get some cameras going? Yeah. Just going right up the goalpost or anywhere, just somewhere. I want a view. This is so unsatisfying.
It'll make you look better. People are like, wow, cool. Look at that camera angle.
And we've already established that we don't really trust the old guys, the referees out on the field, to call everything. We back it up with video footage.
Right.
I just saw a Raiders kick where the ball went 5 feet over the upright, looked like it was in, but the old guy standing 40 feet under it said it wasn't. So that's that. Also, here's a new rule. Tell Rich Eisen. Mm. Tell Rich Eisen. He's in love with my replay gimp.
You talk too much.
He loves my replay gimp idea. I want the new ref screen where I want that doctor screen in between the two refs.
Okay.
That shade. Because I don't like when the one guy looks at the other guy and says, like, yeah. We're on the same page.
Yeah,
we're on the grift here. Okay, follow me. I'm going with this. No. Whatever you saw, you go up there.
Independent judges.
Yeah, because that Raiders kick could have had one guy hands up, the other waving it off. Who the hell knows? I don't like the knowing
the cooperation.
Nod.
Yeah. On the same page.
Yeah.
Collusion, if you will.
Hey, dealer and pit boss, what's going on over there?
Oh, of course, he's going to say it was at 11.
Yeah.
This is probably a dumb question. But, you know, in baseball, you instant replay, it goes to the booth or it goes to New York or whatever. Do they not have that in football?
That's where I started.
It's but all why don't instant they replay. They don't.
In this specific instance, vis-a-vis field goals, they don't have it.
Huh.
Well, they don't have it because they don't have a camera angle that's definitive. You cannot tell from their angle whether it was over. You don't know when it passed the bar.
Yep.
So you can't tell whether it was in or out because you can't tell.
So no matter how many times you watch it over and over again, that's not the problem.
You don't know the depth.
Right.
The angle they give you is not depth. You have to go straight up or sideways across the top. You need to know when it crosses. We can all agree that it went in at some point and maybe went out at some point, but we don't know at what point. Yep. That's what screws everybody up.
Okay.
And they will not give you an angle. I even saw him like telestrating the ball, I think, on the Patriots game where like, oh, it was in and then now it looked like it went out again. This is the Patriots game. They tried one.
This is the one with the analytics with the graphics.
Oh, yeah. Let me see it. Okay. It's all from the end zone a quarter mile away.
They would have sent the game into overtime against the Saints. They lost the game. The rule is, the home ball has to pass inside the outside of the upright.
Or raise it!
So ahead and explain that. Why is that true?
I don't know why that is true.
If that bar were 18 inches higher, we'd have an answer, but we don't have an answer. Oh, were they kicking against the Patriots? I think we got our answer, and that's never good, right? Even when it goes right down the middle, they'll wave that off.
They'll wave it off, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems wildly unsatisfying, especially when you're playing the Patriots who are unbeaten and you're trying to blah, 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 and you just kick.
And of course, raising it in perpetuity is, of course, an option. But like in tennis, it's so I don't watch a lot of tennis, but it's so satisfying. You're like, that was out. And you're like, it was. And they showed that little digital thing where they got the computers that can tell you exactly what it was. Like, that's possible. So let's apply that across the board to all sports.
Right. All right. Please or something. No mas. It just happens on a weekly basis now. It just happened twice.
Multiple times a week,
Right. Why is this not a discussion? And if so, here's the thing about football. It's mostly played on a Sunday, and most welders don't work Sundays. But they do work Mondays. Mm-hmm. And if you got a whole week to get another 5 foot of thin wall steel up that tube,
you pull
pretty
it off.
Doable.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Pretty doable. Most of those stadiums have that weird little cherry picker thing where they can raise you up, get up there with the little settling rig and take care of it. All right. Wants to talk about his experience living in South America. Joshua from Ecuador. Well, let's ask him about that. Joshua?
Hey, Adam, Paul, Gina, how's it going today?
What's going on over there?
How's everything in L.A.? Probably
weird.
No, probably a little worse than Ecuador, huh?
It's always a little hot and a little homeless, but other than that.
Same for you?
Potholes and a-holes, that's what I always say.
We have plenty of potholes. We just got done with a little gasoline protest, so never a dull moment.
Yeah, well, what's going on over there in Ecuador?
Well, I ended up here by, I rode my motorcycle from Alaska to Chile, something I always wanted to do, and kind of stumbled upon Ecuador and took over a little beachfront microbrewery bar and kind of just been hanging out with my feet up for 4 years
A hostile takeover?
Been interesting. Oh. A beachfront microbrewery bar.
Good, nice.
Yeah, nice. So what's it like over there in Ecuador, named after the equator, right? Because it's all on the equator?
Exactly. Zero latitude, mountainous in the interior, and coastal beaches, palm trees along the coast.
What's it like? Beautiful. What's the government like over there?
Corrupt like every place else down here, which is always the issue with the corruption. And they raised gas prices and people couldn't afford it, so they blocked the streets and protested until the government gave up and said, okay, we'll put the gas prices back where they are.
What's in the water over there at the South Central America? Why is everything corrupt? Why is everything in Mexico? Why is everything in Ecuador? Like, what year is it? Like, what's with all the corruption? I get there's a lot of corruption anyway, and we have versions of it, but in general, why does it flourish so much in that neck of the woods?
And are there like weird outlier countries who are like run smoothly? You know what I mean? Like countries that have it figured out somehow? I don't know. I don't know much about the area.
Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, I guess there's a rating system starting at zero and going to positive three, maybe. I mean, Argentina and Chile would kind of be the standards for working better, but they're all on a level of corruption that's just hard to understand. And, you know, I think it, from both ends until the police are not corrupt. I mean, you could pay off a police. I don't get speeding tickets on a motorcycle because I pay them $5 or $10 and move on.
Five.
Wow.
And what about your business?
We're in a pretty touristy gringo area, so we don't really deal with any of the repercussions of the political stuff. But it's really just chill beach town, surfing, the bars, and it's kind of a little bubble that we don't have to deal with the things until, you know, unlike Venezuela, which 20 years ago was the richest country in South America, now has completely collapsed. So we have a Venezuelan influx here that has affected all countries in South America because the whole country has collapsed.
I talked to Bernie Sanders. He says he doesn't want to do all of that, but most of it. He just wants a nice slice of that over here. Just a little bit of that. You know, like if you have... You eat just a whole tablespoon of mustard, it tastes bad, but just a thin veneer of that socialism over there. Then that works. That works every time.
Nobody flees.
No. So what do you pay? Like, how do you do taxes?
Taxes are really cheap. Property taxes, $100 a year or something like that for the business we have. Taxes in general, just cheap on everything. So it's not... which is part of the issue. And it, when they do charge high taxes for something, somebody ends up stealing it high up in the government. I mean, it's bizarre. Construction projects are always corrupt. It's a level of corruption that's very hard to understand. Like I said, I've been through almost every country in South America by motorcycle. So you start to see how fortunate we are in the States. And when people complain about opportunity in the United States, it's laughable. I mean, you have so much opportunity in the United States versus here. There's people that start working at 8, and they'll be a fisherman's son and then a fisherman for their entire life.
Well, the thing that's always weird to me in this country is when, you know, it's my thing, or like when Oprah's giving us a lecture on opportunity, it's like, okay, poor person who was sexually molested and grew up in chaos and now run an empire, aren't you... You're standing there, right? Like, you're the richest woman. You did it. Like, I'm not saying everyone's Oprah, but I'm saying... It's weird coming. It'd be like me, you know, me going, oh, no one can start a podcast. It's not a sustainable business. I'm the wrong guy to say that. Right. And Oprah's probably the wrong person to keep harping on the lack of on the opportunity, because you went and did it tenfold. Go ahead, Josh.
Josh, I'm curious. Can you own land there as a non-citizen?
Yes. It's titled land here. It's not. Like some of the rumors you hear in Mexico, and it's not entirely true in Mexico either, but it's this area, Ecuador, is beautiful. The people are amazing. But like you talk about with somebody like Oprah, fear-mongering, it's insane because we have choices and opportunity. And it's just amazing that a lot of these countries, these people are very generous, very kind. Seems to be the people that have the least offered me the most when I was traveling around by myself on a motorcycle and would invite me to their home and for dinner, which they might not know where dinner is coming the next day in the United States. And it's, I don't have this and I can't get that. And it's like, get off your ass, go outside, get a job, because those opportunities don't even exist here.
Well, thanks, Joshua. I appreciate that. And I'm an endless record on the people constantly like going, you know, in this country, just the language, you know what I mean? Like, they don't provide access to birth control. They're not denying access to birth control. They're not paying for it. Mm. But you can buy it yourself if you'd like. You know, they're not suppressing people or kids. We have, I'll play a couple of clips that points that out in a second. To say, when you talk about this country, to explain, like, if I go, you know, Sean at the other shop is a very competent fabricator. And so if you go, Sean is a good fabricator, and I go, what about that time he mismeasured some of that sheet aluminum? Like, okay, that's true. Right. That's true. He did do that. That does happen. But he's a good fabricator. Yeah.
Right. You know, the record shows.
This is a good country, and we're not a racist country. Well, what about that time? It's like, right. That's impossible for Sean to never make a mistake fabricating or measuring or cutting or whatever he did. The statement is still, both statements are true. Sean is a good fabricator, and Sean mismeasured something.
And that one time?
And it happens.
Yeah.
Right. And that's sort of, that's my thing with this country. We're a good country. We're not a racist country. We're not a whatever country. But it doesn't, you bringing up the time this happened is not really, in any country, if you think about whatever you think about a country, whatever you think about South America, or whatever you think about Central America, what do you think about Mexico? What do you think about Mexico? Okay, you have thoughts about Canada, and you have thoughts about Mexico, right? Mm. They both have incidents. I'm sure there's a couple corrupt politicians in Canada, and I'm sure there are plenty of good politicians or uncorrupted politicians or some in Mexico or whatever that thing is. It does not mean those countries aren't those countries. Right?
Right.
So why bring up the time? Like, oh, Canada's generally well run and well taken care of. Oh, yeah.
What about the one time?
What about that Nordique guy?
Yeah.
That guy, he took all the money for a pro. Okay. I never made the statement where nothing exists ever in these countries or that everyone is always corrupt in Mexico. I'm saying higher incidence of it there than there. Yeah. And that's how you shape the country. All right. Let's talk to Mark. It's Mark Joseph on the phone. Mark?
I'm here. Hey, Adam.
Hey, good talk to you, man. Mark's the producer of No Safe Spaces, so we'll give that a plug. Very, you're doing a great job on this movie. I heard it open, I think, well, you sent me an email that it opened up in Denver and it opened up in San Diego and came in second to the Terminator movie in the theaters it was in.
Oh, my goodness. The fans really came out. San Diego. But here's the fun part. It's like part of the weekend, I was getting fed that we may be beating Terminator at those theaters. It was nip and tuck for a while. So that's when I was furiously texting you, going, you're not going to believe this, but we're actually beating Terminator. Well, we came in number two, and that's still pretty good in both those places.
So that would just be in the theater. It was the Terminator was showing, and No Safe Space was showing. Very, very good. I was laughing. I was watching Prager on Bill Maher just getting pelted because
how'd that conversation go?
Well, because Prager, there's an interesting thing. Prager is a very pure soul, and so he just says whatever he believes, whatever his thing is, and he's very religious. And I used to, it's funny, like I used to watch Evander Holyfield like walk into the ring. And he'd be walking into like fight Mike Tyson, and he seemed completely phased by the entire endeavor.
There was one fight where it was like just kind of singing and dancing down the aisle. I kind of remember that specifically.
And I thought, you're getting in a ring with a killer. And then I realized he's so religious that I think that's the only thing he thinks about or worries about or whatever. So Dennis answers to God, but he doesn't answer to Bill Maher's audience, so he doesn't care. Like, there's a kind of impunity. I have an atheist, and so when you're atheist, you got to be a little tentative when you cross the train tracks, you know? Sorry, Mark, does that sound right with it?
I was there. It was a great evening. Dennis did great. Adam, everybody was great. And the funny thing is, you know, people watch these shows, and I know you know this too, and they think everyone hates each other.
Right.
But there was an after party, and Bill Maher comes over, and we're all having a great time, having stuff to eat and drink, and they take a picture together. And I was there when he told Dennis, he goes, like, I watch your PragerU videos.
Yeah.
And they joked around for a while, and he said, look, if Trump ever puts me in Guantanamo, I want you to come and save me. And Dennis said, I'll swim there to get you myself. So it's just crazy how people think everyone hates each other. They're not. They just disagree.
Mark sent me a picture of Dennis and Bill, like, after the show, just hugging it out and looking like they're having a good old time. So it was fun. And Mark, I want to know your Japan connection. You speak fluent Japanese, correct?
I do. I was born and raised in Japan. My parents were Americans after the war. General MacArthur asked for Americans to come and, you know, help Japan. And my parents were two of the people that went there. And so I spent the first 18 years of my life there. Can you tell by the accent a little bit?
No, it's insane. What do we need to know about Japan or growing up in Japan? For first off, how did they accept you? Were you accepted with open arms? Did they look at you askance? Like, is there any kind of racism, for lack of a better term, growing up as a round eye in Japan?
Well, look, at the racism in Japan that I experienced was mostly positive racism, if you can imagine that. You get better treatment. You know, if I call and speak normal Japanese, they wouldn't know I was a Japanese, so I'd get the normal treatment. But if I call with an American accent, I'll get straight to the line, right? Because they love America.
Part
of growing up overseas and spending a lot of time overseas, I think a lot of the stuff, the self-loathing, America hatred experience, is from people who haven't been abroad very much. Mm-hmm. And you live overseas, and America looks like a candy store. I mean, you come here, and it's like all the stuff you take for granted. And in the movie, we have that amazing rant where you talk about, in this country, if you say this, that happens, all the bad things that'll happen, but don't happen here. And so, look, Japan is pretty free. But I wouldn't recommend going out and criticizing the emperor a whole lot just to be on the safe side. Whereas in the States, you criticize Trump every day.
There's an interesting thing that I'm thinking about. I started the show talking about psychology and sort of being thoughtful about that. And I've always said, you know, it's ironic that the people I've done the most for in my life, the people I've given the most money to or tried to help the most or whatever, all hate me the most, easily the most. The neutral people, the people have done more for me or whatever, we're fine. They love me. We got no problems. The people I've lent a lot of money to or helped out or whatever, they all hate my guts. And I think it's interesting that the country we dropped two nukes on worships us. Yeah. It's sort of like the relationship I have with my family, right? Just the opposite, right? I mean, it's interesting.
It's unprecedented in human history. I mean, when in human history does a country defeat another country and then hand it back and say, okay, yeah, well, you know, let's keep in touch. You know? I mean, the whole point of conquering land was to steal their stuff and subjugate their people. And here, you know, we did take Okinawa and then we give it back in 20 years.
Right.
I mean, so, you know, America is not the great evil in history. We're actually the opposite.
Well, I don't know what countries you're comparing us to. All the others who came before us had bombs dropped on their soil and then took over the other country and then gave it back with a police force
left behind.
You know, like the Roman, I don't know, Spain. Like, what are we comparing ourselves to? That's my whole thing, and I feel like Prager's whole thing is as well with racism or whatever. It's like, what are we comparing ourselves to? And all we have to do is be in the top 5%, and I'd say we're good.
We pass.
We pass.
Yeah.
Mark, where are we opening past this weekend? What is the plan when you do an independent film like this? How do you do it?
Well, first thing is, you know, we call this movie a docudrama because we have these great dramatic elements of recreating you as a child. And by the way, you know, your listeners should know that we have young, like 12-year-old Adam Carolla in the film, or an actor who looks a lot like him. Actually looks like Sonny, I think.
Yeah.
But after I played the scene for Adam, he's like, you know, this looks great, except it's not very accurate. We didn't have a second story in our house when I was growing up. So we did get that part wrong
because the
kid comes down the stairway.
Right.
But the way we roll these out, you know, documentaries traditionally don't do very well in theaters. And so we have a different way of doing it. And that's why we've had this great box office. And that is, we do a couple of cities early on just to kind of show the marketplace what we can do. And basically, when we had that incredible opening, and thank you, Brian and Gina, for coming out to Phoenix.
Thanks for having us.
But that was the number two opening in history for a documentary after Michael Moore's Sicko that we all got to experience that weekend. Your fans and Dennis's fans. So basically that gives all the theater chain owners across America like, wow, okay, this could work for us too. And that's the whole way of rolling it out slowly. So we hope to be kind of hitting major numbers of theaters around the middle of the month and into Thanksgiving.
Well, 50% with the critics, but 100% with the audience.
That is literally all you need to know.
Can I just say one thing about that? So everybody that I work with knows my goal is to always be at 49%. And so we're like a point above where I like to be.
Well,
the reason is, I worked with Mel Gibson on The Passion of the Christ. And, you know, to me, as an objective, like as a film person, that's almost, you know, that's a really, really great movie. But it was 49. So 49 to me, I know you guys play that the game, but 49 means it was really, really good, but it's being punished for other reasons.
Well, you hitch your team to the right wagon because I don't stray into fresh. Mark,
I need one more bad review.
Before we let you go, my dad's working on it tonight. I got him a screener.
Well, I submitted.
I said, just give me an honest... Yeah. Honest read on what you think of my work, Bob. So he's going to, you know, that'll probably be logged tonight if he doesn't.
Tomorrow morning.
Mark, where are we opening beyond in this weekend or coming into this weekend?
Yeah, so we really need the Carolla forces to come out. We nosafespaces.com, and then there's a theaters link there. But, you know, the big places, we're in Arizona. We're still going to be in San Diego, but we're also, of course, in Denver and surrounding cities. But we're starting to open up now in Florida, a bunch of theaters in Florida, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, New Mexico, North and South Carolina, Utah. So coming up to some big cities in the next 2 weeks.
Let's say I was picking up the phone in Japan and you were going to give me your Japanese sounding accent that was a local versus an American. I'm curious if you can do it. I've never asked you to. Every time I see you and you explain you speak Japanese or born in Japan, I always want to ask you, say something.
Right. See if Prove we can it. Tell.
Yeah. So what would the local accent flavor versus the person who learned it, the round eye? What would the difference be?
Well, so basically it's the Spanish, the rolled R kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, a place we used to visit when we were kids, there's a town called, in English, you would say Karuizawa, right? Mm-hmm. Karuizawa, that's what Americans would say. So a Japanese would say Karuizawa.
Mm.
So you do that, you don't roll the R, you do the R roll, and it's just more, the intonation is different. So, you know, it's hard to explain. But
no, I get it. You just did it.
The inflection really has a lot more movement than the American one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that if you're going to get someone on the phone, you would do the gringo accent
versus the
local.
Arigato, Ohio.
They get the most important person on the phone right away. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. They treat foreigners, you know. Well, I should say certain foreigners very well. Other foreigners, not so much.
Yeah,
interesting. Who do they not treat well?
Well, look at they. You know, Japanese love African American culture. They love hip hop, but you know, it might be a little tough when you go to the bathhouse they might look at you a little funny and say, are you sure you want to be in the bathhouse here? So, you know, it's that kind of stuff.
They're shaming them.
Yeah. I think Prager was talking about it on After Time with Bill Maher. I think they turned away some boat people or something like that. Was that what he was talking about?
Yeah, he was talking about after the Vietnam War, Japan wouldn't accept refugees. I haven't checked that, but I'm sure he's accurate. But, you know, America, again, we're hands open, right? Come on, come in, come one, come all. And part of it is, look, Japan is not a multi-ethnic society, so they're not used to it, and we are.
Mm-hmm.
But we're just, again, just stuff that you take for granted about America. And so for those of you who hate America, you know, travel a little bit. Go outside. Experience the world, and you'll come back with a different attitude.
Well, and it's a win-win, because if you find a place you like better, you can stay there. Yeah, and America. If you don't, you can come back with a new appreciation.
Thanks, Mark Joseph. NoSafeSpaces.com. Here's what I realized growing up with my grandmother, my mom. My grandmother was in the Communist Party for a while, and my mom is whatever, and she's like female Ed Asner. They would never say they hate this country. Right. They would go, I'm saying it could be so much better. Right. If I love this country, that's why. It's sort of like saying, I only constantly criticize my son because I know how much better he could be in math, and I know how much better he could be at soccer, so I constantly criticize him, but it's because I want him to be a better soccer player.
And how's that relationship going?
And also, do you really love your son that much? Or it's just like a constant barrage of like, here's what could be better. But my grandmother did hate this country, although I don't know what she would. What was attractive about communism other than, so if you kind of take my grandmother, you go, well, who do you hate? And the answer is, I hate my dad. That's how it works. So what would he hate? He would hate a daughter who embraced communism. Right. But you don't love communism because communism flies in the face of all the causes. They repress people, and they're not good to people of different faith, and don't be. My grandmother loved gay people. These folks, these places you embrace, not so good.
Something's popped into my head, so let me ask you this question then. So something Mark said, which I liked, was, you know, people think when they watch Real Time that, you know, Dennis hates Bill Maher and vice versa. Everyone on the panel hates each other because they're all yelling at each other. No, they're disagreeing, and they can get along, and they don't hate. They're disagreeing. Why then someone who disagrees with America's policies or think this thing about America is wrong or whatever it is, why do they hate America?
In my opinion, you mean, why do I say it that way?
Or what? You're not the only one.
I don't accuse people of hating America as much as I think it's misplaced. Look, if I thought they really hated America, I think they would move.
If they really did hate it.
I think you think that.
I think there are a lot of people who do wave that flag of like, this person is agreeing with this aspect or they're criticizing this aspect. They hate America.
Oh,
I think there's a lot of people who say that.
I agree. I think it's a little knee jerk, and also, I'm a little worried about deciding what's in someone's heart. Like, I think
deciding for them.
I think Beto O'Rourke doesn't think this country is as racist as he says it is, but he thinks it's an avenue for votes. He's not dumb enough to think that. I think. I don't have a thought about, like, I don't think a lot of people hate this country. I think when people really hate a country or a marriage or a neighbor or something, they just kind of move. Like, they hate their job. You know, they hate their boss. For the most part, if you hate your job, you hate your boss. You might not do it in a week, but over the course of years, you'll go somewhere else.
So maybe we do new merch and tweak it a little bit and say, you don't hate America, you hate your dad.
My grandmother worked for the VA. You know what I mean? So
she had a lot of range.
She had a lot of range, but she did hate her dad, and she did hate her brother. And I don't think she hated this country. I think it was just a constant critique. And I'm all for the critique. Look. I critique this country all the time. I want stuff fixed all the time. I want them to fix a million things. I could do 2 hours on TSA in every airport, and I have. But it doesn't it doesn't mean I think this country's bad. I do a constant critiquing of this country. I think what I'm saying is I guess it depends. One of the concepts is, if I'm trying to close my eyes and figure this out. I want to talk about things we could fix. I don't really want to live in the past. Like, I don't want to talk about segregation and Jim Crow and stuff like that. Not because it didn't exist, just because I don't have a time machine.
I can't spend
a lot of time fixing World War II or the Civil War or any Vietnam or Korea or anything. And I'm willing to admit mistakes were made both directions every time, all the time. That's how history is. Super messy, fine. So number one, when people are looking in the rearview mirror a little too much and talk about how this country was built on a bedrock of racism and stuff, my antenna goes up a little bit because, you know, back to Beto O'Rourke, you're not talking about how we're going to fix this. You're sort of just talking about how broken everything was and is. We have this systemic racism in our blood, in our DNA, you know. So when I see a lot of looking into the rear view of this country, I think, okay, that person. So I want to look forward and fix the TSA. Like, I want shorter lines and more this. I want taller goalposts and shorter lines and a chicken in every pot, two cars in every garage.
And a camera in every goalpost.
That's right. Longer goalposts, shorter lines at TSA. That's what I'm active. And yes, I love football, but I want football fixed. Yeah. And I love everything about football. I've said football saved my life, but I still complain about the goalposts because I want this thing that I love fixed. But I'm not going back and going, you know, Don Hutson, that guy was a weak-ass running back or quarterback. You know, that guy.
Shame on the league.
Yeah, Night Train Lane. That guy was lame,
lame.
Right. So I love football. So I'm constantly going, well, when you're on the ground and the ball comes loose in the scrum and your arm brushes the other guy, you should be able to get up and run for a touchdown. That's an exciting play. We need to change that. Okay. Ooh, why are you harshing on football? Not harshing on football. I love football. Want it better. If I was constantly looking back, like Vince Lombardi and Abe Gibron, those guys were assholes and racist. Well, then you could start going, well, it kind of seems like you're bagging on.
You don't really like football.
Yeah,
do you?
It seems like you're bagging. Oh no, I love it. I just want to. We have to realize mistakes were made. You know, it's like there's a lot of leading with the crown of the helmet. Yes, there was. Well, then we fixed it, or we tried to fix it. You know, and there was no concussion protocol, and a lot of these guys then were, you know, injured and crippled by the game. It's like yes. Like to fix all that. Wish it didn't happen.
Yep.
I wish there was no Jim Crow, and I wish not everyone who played for the Steelers, you know, front four in the 70s, that had arthritic hips or dementia or whatever. But moving forward, we made mistakes. Other games make mistakes as well. Let's work moving forward to fix it because we love it.
Right.
But don't live in the past because that makes me wonder. That's all I'm saying. All right. And let's see. Oh, I got a spot here. So let me tell you about LifeLock. Millions of smart speakers are open to Wi-Fi vulnerability, allowing a key reinstallation attack, which lets hackers view and control traffic across standard Wi-Fi networks. Oh, your information, it's all digital and it's all out there, and everyone's trying to get a hold of it. It's important to understand our connected world. Cyber criminals are out there. They're trying to take what's yours. Someone's identity is stolen every 2 seconds. One Mississippi, two Mississippi. There goes someone's identity. Oh, I think I know that dude. I think I knew him. Not anymore. You could miss certain threats, and you don't want that. You want a pro. You want LifeLock in there. Good thing there's LifeLock. They detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number and a sale on the dark web. There's problems. U.S.-based restoration specialists will work to fix it. Right, Dawson?
No one prevents all identity theft or monitor transactions at all businesses. Join LifeLock now and get an extra 10% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or go to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for an extra 10% off.
All right. Let's see. Dan Dunn is out there. He's brought us some whiskey.
Get ready for a fun second half.
Nice whiskeys. You guys are going to be
We will sample and share our thoughts right after this. Hey, it's Adam Carolla.
It's Mark Garagos.
We do a show called Reasonable Doubt.
Best hour in the universe.
Sometimes 54 minutes.
And sometimes we've been known to do 48 minutes as well, and sometimes an hour six.
Either way, we round up. Best hour. Like Mark Bill.
It's exactly like in 6 minute intervals. Exactly.
Every Saturday on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Subscribe to Reasonable Doubt, the best hour in the universe. With Mark Garagos and Adam Carolla. Every Saturday on Podcast One, Carolla Digital, and Apple Podcasts. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, man, what do you think about this song? Baker Street by Gary Rafferty. Two-tone or no?
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
No, I have it as a good song. I don't have it as a Tool tune.
Nothing hokey, though, about the sax?
I like Steeler's Wheel and Baker. What's his name? What's his name? Rafferty.
Rafferty.
Good harmonies. I don't know what happened to Rafferty and Steeler's Wheel. Steeler's Wheel had a couple of good songs, and they had a little they kind of had some Doobie Brothers and some Steely Dan and stuff, and like,
no, this is not a Tool. This is close. This is like, Ginny, you brought in Bruce Hornsby. That's just the way it
is. Yep.
Uh-huh. And I think I said, now just a good song. Close, but yeah. just a good
well,
song.
Right Down the Line is one of my favorite songs of all time.
Yeah it's got a clean sound. Yeah. Like, it's good.
Okay.
All right. Dan Dunn in studio, everybody.
Hey.
What we're drinking with Dan Dunn. It's available on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, rate, and review. Just got done with Matthew McConaughey on his show.
Yeah.
That's a good get. How'd that work?
You know, man, Matthew's involved with whiskey, with Wild Turkey.
So oh, that's right.
It came through that. He was in town doing some volunteer work, feeding firefighters.
That's right. Yeah.
So got involved in that and thought, well, if I can cash in on these firefighters' pain by having getting McConaughey on my show. No. Mm. So we went out. We did some barbecue. Had him out. Eddie Russell, the master distiller for Wild Turkey, and Neil Everett from SportsCenter was there on the show as well.
Yeah. I do. I'm envious of all people like Phil Rosenthal. It's like Phil Rosenthal likes to eat, and he likes to travel.
And
so thus, he puts a nanny cam on his shoulder, and he gets paid to do what he loves to do.
And somebody feeds Phil.
And I always think about that with McConaughey, because it's like the toughest, the biggest pain in the ass part of acting or whatever, commercials are like big chunks of dialogue. You have 30 seconds. You have to spit out 80 seconds worth of words in 30 seconds. Like, commit. It's like, McConaughey's like, whether I'm driving a Lincoln or drinking Wild Turkey or doing both at the same time, lots of shots of me sitting and thinking.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Smoldering.
I love that. I would want that woven into every contract I have. Like, I'm not going to dance and pitch. Here's a long shot.
I'm going to brood.
I'll tell you what. Long shots of my standing, walking along the boardwalk, thinking about whiskey. All right, pay me.
I'm gonna fall in that pool. I'm gonna do it once. Get every camera rolling because I'm gonna do it again.
I'm gonna drive this Navigator, but I'm gonna think while I'm driving it. And nobody looks like they're thinking better than me. I'm the best thing. The worst, Katy Perry. She looks like she's thinking about something dumb all the time. I look like I'm thinking about something super important, even if I'm not. But anyway, there's no teleprompter. There's no dialogue. Nobody has to send me notes or switch out goldenrod pages. I just think.
You see that pool table those grips are playing at?
That's right.
Clear them out. I'm going to take one shot, get every camera rolling, because I'm not doing it again.
That's right.
He does genuinely seem like a very deliberative person. When I talked to him when we did the interview for the show, he really gets into it, man, and he keeps talking, and despite the fact that his publicist was behind him, like, doing gymnastics, trying to get him off the show, like, we're done now, we're done, and he just keeps going, and he locks in. He locks in on you, and I'm gonna say this. The man crush was in full effect on this one.
Sure.
I was like, God damn, he's a good-looking guy, and he's very—he's got this magnetism about him. So
he looks like he's thinking about something important.
Well, it doesn't seem—you know what? He seems like he's present. That's what it is. And a lot of times when you talk to people, they do not seem present at all, and it's a little bit disarming because I'm like, dude, usually guys are used to doing this 20— you know, they're doing it day after day after day. He kind of makes you feel—you used to hear this about Bill Clinton a lot, like makes you feel like they're, you know— They're feeling you. They're getting you.
Yes.
That's how I felt about McConaughey.
That's a connection. Yeah, we're looking at him. He's staring through the back of your head.
Seriously, just that one shot, he is looking into your soul.
He really was. Yeah. I was like, man, we're hitting it here.
I feel like this guy could just work for any company. You know, I mean, spokesperson, but not speaking. I'll walk through your Hilton, and I'll look like I'm thinking about your Hilton. I'll walk on your American Airlines flight, and I'll be thinking about it.
Yeah.
And that's better than 1,000 words.
Are you interested in a new thought person?
All right, Matthew, next meeting's with the CEO of Kotex.
I'm thinking hard. Hungry man chili. Oh, yeah. Thinking about that. Thinking about beans right now.
When his brother came in here, didn't he bring some booze or something? He was drinking.
He brought a bunch of beers.
That's he's a Coors guy, maybe.
Yeah, he didn't look like he was thinking about his musk. Oh, yeah.
Some domestic.
Yeah.
He was thinking a little less than Matt, but
he does. He does. You know what? He knows his stuff. That's for sure. I was talking to him about. You know, he is not just. You know. The celebrity spokesperson for Wild Turkey, he knows what he's talking about. Like, he really was getting into the process and the mash bill and all this other stuff. So I'll give him that for sure. He's walking the walk.
Where does or driving the drive when he's thinking inside his navigator,
rolling a booger in his finger.
Yeah. Where does Wild Turkey sort of come down on? I'm not a Wild Turkey guy, but I'm not a Wild Turkey guy. Is there something good or something bad, or what are we missing with Wild Turkey?
Love it. Legendary brand. The master distiller is a guy named Eddie Russell. His father, Jimmy Russell, still involved, is the oldest living master distiller in the world. Been 65 years.
41 years of age.
Yeah, he's 41 years of age.
Their livers explode before they
see their first gray
hair. It's a short lifespan.
To like loopers.
Here's the thing. Whiskey, and we'll talk about this when we get into these whiskeys, but the whiskey category itself was kind of dead at the end of the 20th century. People forget that. And if you go in the liquor stores now and you see 150 different choices, it was over. Okay, there was a few brands. It was vodka, gin. People were not drinking whiskey not that long ago, 20 years ago. Wild Turkey's been a brand that's been around for a very long time. What happened to a lot of those brands when you started to get all of these craft brands, and we're going to touch on a couple of these, people started thinking, Wild Turkey's not cool. It's not new. It's not fun. It's not. So part of what Matthew, I think, was doing with that brand was saying, hey, this is the one that kind of one of the brands that kind of started it all. And so I think Wild Turkey make some of the best whiskey expressions in the country. I mean, didn't you just go to Kentucky recently?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of distilleries.
Went to the Bullet.
Mm-hmm. You know, don't get me wrong. The new ones, you know, Bullet's been around for a while, but not nearly as long as Wild Turkey. Mm. I mean, these guys know what they're doing, you know, and there's something to be said about that. There's something, you know, you're a wine guy, Adam, I know that, and, you know, there's something to be said about a lot of all the new wines that popped up in Northern California. But guess what? Bordeaux, Burgundy, those families have been doing this for centuries, and there's a reason why those wines are so sought after, and I think it's kind of a similar thing with Wild Turkey. It's an old brand, but
tried and true.
I like it. Personally.
I don't know. My feeling with McConaughey is, why limit yourself to booze? You know, like, hey, Sonny D, I can sit around and look like I'm thinking about you. You know what I mean?
Yoo-hoo?
No one won't know I'm not really thinking about you.
Contemplating this yoo-hoo?
Yeah.
Deep thoughts. So yeah, anyway, he's on the show this week. Neil Everett is on the show from SportsCenter, who doesn't Neil's less of a thinker. He's a doer.
He's
an action man.
Seems like a cool cat. I see him on SportsCenter all the time.
Oh, Neil, you guys would hit it off. You got to get him on here one of these times. He's quick, he's clever, he's a super cool guy, and always love talking to Neil.
Yeah, he's great on SportsCenter.
Yeah, man.
Guillermo del Toro. Or did I say that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kiefer Sutherland. We've had some great, great guests. All right, so listen to that, what we're drinking with Dan Dunn. Should we explain what we're doing here today?
So last time I was in, we did an agave thing. We got into it with some tequila and some mezcal. We had such a good time. It was like, well, now that the fall is coming, most people outside of California are experiencing the fall. So what do you start thinking? It's like whiskey, brown spirits. So I wanted to bring you guys a couple of things here, and we got some treats. This first one is really cool, and again, Adam, I thought of you when I decided to bring this in. You know Dave Finney, the man who Orrin Swift wines, the Prisoner.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Finney was an iconic American winemaker.
They sold Orrin Swift, right?
He sold it for like $300 million.
It's a great wine.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. So the Prisoner was the wine that put Dave on the map. So he's known for making Zinfandel blends and doing. So he decided to get into the spirits game a couple years ago. And he opened a distillery. It's on Mare Island, which was a military base up in Napa. Actually, it was the first Pacific U.S. naval base up there. Took this place over, started this distillery. Mare Island, it's called, because it's supposedly a ship got sunk, and this horse swam to the island and made it. So there's the story.
Sure.
So this is Dave Finney's whiskey. It's called Savage and Cook. And this particular bourbon is called The Burning Chair. Okay, I really dig this stuff. So let's get our glasses, shall we?
Pass them over here. I'll help you out.
All right. I got to do some pods with Drew later. I don't want to be judged, but I don't waste booze. So just a taste.
Don't give us too much.
You all have dump cups right in front of you.
I can't waste.
Yeah, this is going to go to someone else.
Pass to Brian.
Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you.
I feel get the funnel out because this ain't going to waste. I don't dump booze.
So, yeah, this is Savage and Cook, The Burning Chair. What they do with this is they finish it in – they age it in white American oak barrels. Obviously, you've got to make bourbon that way. Mm. And then they finish it in Cabernet barrels from Dave's various wine projects, right?
That's delicious.
All right,
it's got a cinnamon kind of a vibe to it or something.
Yeah, a little brown sugar maybe and
it's
some yum.
It's toasty all
oak, butterscotch. This is $59 a bottle.
That's not bad.
That's acquirable.
It has a lot going on, but it doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
No.
It's nice.
Yeah.
It's 88 proof, so the alcohol's not going to blast you. This whiskey is sourced from Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee. Eventually, it'll be their own juice up there.
Mm-hmm.
What happens with a lot of these new brands is they get in the game, and while they're building the distillery, they source the whiskey from other places until they're up and running. And it's going to take 4 years before, you know, they can have their own stuff out in terms of aging it. So, yeah, it's 88 proof. Mm. Water comes from a natural spring up there in Northern California on one of his properties. This one I think is super smooth.
Yeah.
Really great sipping whiskey.
Do they make it in Northern California? Or they bring the stuff in from the Midwest?
They bring in the liquid from various places that produce whiskey on a mass scale, and then they make it up there in the distillery. Oh. They're doing the blending, the aging, and all of that. And like I said, eventually all the juice will come from their own distillery.
Yeah. That's lovely.
Educate me a little bit because I don't know. I'm not a whiskey drinker, but I fell very much in love with bourbon when we went to Kentucky. What are the differences? What are we looking for?
There's rules for bourbon. Okay, bourbon has to be aged in white oak, charred white oak, new barrels. The barrels can't be used for anything before that. Brand new barrels got to be aged at least 2 years. Does not have to be made in Kentucky. People, that's
that was not the impression we got.
Yeah. Well, let's say this. 95% of the world's bourbon is made within a 60-mile radius of Bardstown, Kentucky. So most of it's coming from there. This is bourbon. It's not made in Kentucky. What other rules do we have? Oh, it's got to be at least 40% alcohol. Okay.
That's 80 proof.
80 proof. This one is 88, a little bit more. I think when you start getting up higher proofs, what I like to do is take a little bit. You got water there. This one is fine, but maybe really just take your finger, put a couple of drops in there. When it gets up above 90, 95, it opens it up. Because
I use my dick.
That's why I do that too, yeah. I drool in it. But, you know, it helps you taste it a little bit better. It mitigates the effects
my
of the alcohol.
My finger's too long, it'll go too deep into the
thing.
You need
just that right amount.
So this is going to bother you if I dump?
A little long. You can dump it. I'll dump it. But here's the thing.
Bring in more plastic cups.
The cups are coming home.
Yeah. Okay. There we go.
Bring in more plastic cups. It shouldn't go to waste. These guys should have some.
It should not go to waste. Well, listen, I'll make a suicide.
Yeah. Just do it? All four of them?
Yeah. I'll do all four. I'll put them all in. I'll put some cellophane over and I'll bring it home.
Sacrilege.
You could do worse than all of these.
Well, if I'm making a booze stew... And all the ingredients are excellent.
Next, eat your feelings.
Hold on. There's an idea. That one I want. Adam Carolla's booze stew. Sure. That's kind of what you did with Mangria in a way, right? It was wine and vodka stew.
It's the original name.
You give me four amazing spirits, and I'll put them in one cup. Yeah. I'll enjoy them when I get home.
Yeah. And you can do different batches. It's like booze stew number one, which is a certain combination, booze stew number two. I'm seeing this, man.
Maybe if you guys just pour them all into the same cup.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah,
if you
same cup.
Put them all
and then,
in here, this would be number one.
Chris, you're so smart.
Oh, wow.
So
and then I'll
I didn't know how to dog
up.
Whistle you from over here.
Yeah,
okay, that's number one.
And the loser of today's show has to drink it all. Okay, so we're going to go from Dave Finney, rock star, winemaker / whiskey maker to actual rock stars. This one's Blackened, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is Metallica's whiskey.
Oh. Mm.
So here's what the story is with this.
Also Northern California?
Yeah, also Northern California. So this whiskey was the brainchild of a guy named Dave Pickerel. Dave Pickerel was and I didn't realize this when I was bringing it in, but he's got a hand in a couple of these too. Dave's a legendary master distiller, was at Maker's Mark and also Whistlepig. He died a year ago. It's like the 1 year anniversary. He died on November 1st last year, unexpectedly. Whiskey Fest in San Francisco.
Oh.
Hmm.
Heart attack. So Jesus. Anyway, Dave made Blackened. Here's the thing about this whiskey that makes it different than almost any other whiskey out there. They do a thing called sonic enhancement. Okay, have you ever seen these videos when they shoot sound waves at like low hertz and actually sees the water moving? That was Dave's thing, and he was convinced of this, okay? He was convinced that this was the future of basically blasting it in at low frequency, which agitates the liquid inside the barrel when they're finishing it, and it changes the way that it interacts with the wood.
Does
and
it
I'm
make
not
it
joking
better?
You. So here's the thing. Dave, again, this is like, Dave was the maestro, okay? I met with him at Tales of the Cocktail a year and a half ago before this brand was out. He had two mason jars. He said, this is the Metallica whiskey I'm working on. It's not done yet. He said, exact same process. It was made. This one underwent one sonic enhancement, a different playlist at a different frequency, and this one another one. And I tasted them, and I kid you not, the difference was absolutely noticeable. And I said, Dave, you're shitting me. There's no way that's all you did. He said, I'm telling you, this is it.
McConaughey does a sonic de-handsman where he doesn't talk sonically, but he still gets paid because he looks like he's thinking about whiskey.
This
is the smoothest whiskey on earth. I didn't talk to it. I stared at it for hours.
That's another enhancement. Al, he just stares. Yeah.
Oh, wait. I gave you the wrong glass. Sorry. I gave you the wrong glass. Sorry.
There we go.
Oh, and Brian's glass.
Yeah. So this is Blackened. Mm. And
so, Dan, you've heard of bottle shock, like, you know, the wine can get agitated by being moved around too much. Is that sort of an opposite thing with
heavy pour?
With the,
oh.
Sorry.
I'm
leaving all this with you, too. Well, here's the thing, man. Once it's in the bottle, it's done. It's what this is doing is he's aging this in the final step for this. Mm-hmm. Is they're aging this in sherry casks, okay? Mm. They're finishing it in sherry casks. And that's when they're blasting it with the sound.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
So chemically...
Getting in there, and it's shaking it up inside the wood and doing this thing to it. And,
well, all right. So let's try to remove the sort of smoke and hokum here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I can taste it.
So they always talk about... how much of what's inside of the wooden cask or barrel or whatever it is, whether it's charred or white oak or whatever, like how much of that is moving into the liquid that's in it, you know?
Right.
And how long it's in there and, you know, things of that, what's charred and all that kind of stuff all factor in. So anytime you kind of agitate it, it's going to pull out more of what's in there, right?
Absolutely. And the time, too, is a big thing. Obviously, if you've had a whiskey, if you've had an old scotch or something like that, that's like a 32-year-old scotch, That's sucking everything out of the wood. The longer it's in there, the more it's going to take it out of it. The thinking behind this is that the molecules in the liquid getting blasted with that sound frequency at the low frequency like that, it does something with the way that it interacts with the wood. Now, they have a flavor profile. What are you guys picking up on this? Like, this one is sweeter to me. A little bit sweeter than what we had.
And especially the way it smells, it has like a chocolate, a coconut. Mm.
Yeah. I get that. I get a little toffee too. Yeah. Like a little bit of that, you know.
I know they do that thing all the time where like this tastes oaky or nutty.
Like
I feel
leather.
Like it's a cop out. This tastes like Kimmel's cock. I'm going to be straight up.
We're going to have to take your word.
It's cocky.
I can't corroborate that.
Well, to me, that's how it's hitting my palate.
When
Jimmy hit my soft palate, that's what this tastes like.
If I throw it in your face, can we do the same thing? Or is it a different way you experience it?
Yeah, trying to Chris in my head.
It's very smooth. I will say that.
Oh, I'm a big fan of this one. I work with a group called the Whiskey X. We do events all over the country. And it's usually like 60 different whiskeys every night at this thing, and the line for Blackened is usually pretty big. So the guy that took over for Dave when he died, are you guys familiar with Stranahan's? Stranahan's whiskey out of Colorado?
No.
First craft distillery in Colorado. The guy that took over, Rob Dietrich, is I think carrying on Dave's legacy here. But you hear brands like, oh, Metallica, how could... But the guy that made this is one of the most legendary master distillers ever.
You know, I fold this theme into a lot of shows, but nothing better than competition for getting a lot of choice and a lot of excellence, right?
Like, and how?
This is why I'm always kind of pushing, like, open up the market, let people compete, and we win.
Yep.
And we get all the different flavors of the rainbow.
It's hard to come by. Is this hard to come by?
No, both the Savage and Cook and the Black, and you're going to be able to find that. It's easily, readily available all over the place. Yeah.
I'm sorry, did you say how much a bottle for the Blackened?
Blackened is, I think, $40, right around that range. Wow. All of these whiskeys are fairly affordable, except for the last one that we're going to have. The last one's virtually ungettable, but we'll have that.
Not around the Pearl Cruise.
So, yeah, Blackened, love it.
That was good.
That was good.
Now we're going to move on. We're going to go classic. We talked a little bit earlier about Wild Turkey. This is Maker's Mark 46.
Yes, sir. Okay.
At 46.
Yeah, so 46.
Okay. 46 years or 46 proof? Or?
What it is they 46%
said alcohol.
They tried 46 different ways to come up with a wood formula that they were going to use to flavor this, and that's where the name came from. Maker's was the same thing forever. Everybody knows Maker's Mark. You got the iconic red wax on the top.
Yeah.
In 2010, they came up with this new product, and they were calling it Maker's 46. In the last 6 months, they started calling it Maker's Mark 46. Here we go. What they're doing with this is they're finishing this in a barrel that has French oak staves in it. Okay? Staves of wood. So they're basically putting this. They empty the barrel, then they put it back in, and they put these staves in. They're just floating
chip?
In there. No, essentially, but the staves
like
are the
spike.
Actual things that they make the barrel out of. So they're the long wooden
staves,
and they put them in there. Yeah, let me pour you some of this.
Just a touch. Thank you. I'm feeling awesome.
It's weird.
Excited for the news.
I keep wondering why you guys keep bringing me back, and now I'm starting to figure it out. Yeah, here we go.
We got to book you for tomorrow.
Where's Dan?
It's interesting. You know, in a world in a world where there is no more saddle making and no more buggy
craftsmanship,
barrel making has not gone anywhere.
It's probably come back in the last 50 years. Probably increased tenfold.
Yeah, right? I remember when I announced my dad I was going off to be a barrel maker, and he called me a fool. But now.
Who's laughing now? Jokes on him, Pop.
Weren't a lot of the wineries in Napa like buying like French, like from France, right? Buying barrels from France? There weren't enough barrels in the States. I thought I remember hearing something about that.
Adam jokes, but really, you probably could not be in a better business right now than making barrels, you know, because I mean, the demand is through the roof. And you got to realize bourbon barrels, because they have to be new. They can't be used again for bourbon. Once you've made Maker's Mark, that barrel goes off, and that barrel gets used to finish scotch. That barrel gets used to make tequila, to make rum.
Oh, wow.
The bourbon barrels are going all over the world, okay?
Well, the barrel business took a little hit when Barrel Man from Denver...
That's right. When he finally checked out.
When he died 8 years ago, tragically, the bottom literally fell out of the barrel market because the Barrel Man... brought. It wasn't that he used so many barrels. Sure, he used a lot of barrels, and we made a lot of money off of Barrel Man from Denver. Yes, that was a major part of our income. But what he did for the barrel industry—that
put it on the map.
You know, when he died, the barrel industry dimmed their lanterns for,
that's
for
right.
1 hour.
That's right.
This smells very cocoa-y.
Cocoa-y?
Yeah, like a cocoa chocolate. Yeah, this one much more than
the other. You're always going to get cocoa, and you're going to get chocolate. You're going to get caramel. You're going to get
that
sweetness.
That?
It's from the wood. It's because they char the wood. Bourbon barrels have to be charred.
Delicious.
And what that does is it brings all the sugar, all that comes to the surface, and that's what's getting soaked in.
Wow. Got it.
So this is 94 proof, so this is the highest proof of that we've had so far.
Are there any like lower-end like distilleries or brands that add sugar?
You're not allowed to. In order for it to be called bourbon, the laws that we have in the United States, you can't add anything like that. You can't add any sugar. Okay. You can't add. Yeah, no, that's not.
Follow-up question then. What is the sad trend of like all these heritage brands getting into like Tennessee honey or like, you know, this is honey age or this is like, you're putting sugar
like pancake
in
syrup.
Yeah, so you'll notice those are called whiskeys. They don't call them bourbons.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you can't get Kentucky straight bourbon. You can't do that. You can do whatever you want. But you just can't call it a bourbon.
Okay.
So you're getting this other category that we have now is American whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you've got
American cheese. American makes everything worse.
Yeah. Or Stranahan's, the one I mentioned. That's Colorado whiskey. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place up in Seattle called Westland that's doing some great stuff. But they're doing different things and they're not adhering to the rules of bourbon.
Mm.
And that's okay. It doesn't mean it's not good whiskey.
I'm sure there's a whole other episode.
But there's shit whiskey. I mean, when you talk about this honey stuff, like, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't like it. I don't like flavored whiskey.
Whiskey's a flavor.
Yeah, but don't you like drunk 17-year-old girls?
That's what
I mean,
it is.
You say you hate that, but I know you've told me off the air that you love underage girls in their shit face.
I believe what he says, can't get enough of them.
It's like, come on, be careful
which
what you
it?
Hope for, Dan.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a whole other episode we could do, but Japanese whiskeys, do you have thoughts on the Japanese?
Because that's a whole other
engineer.
Yeah, well, there's no rules over there, so they lie a lot. By the way, it's funny you mentioned that 17. Just the other day, I had people at my house, and I had on like an 80s hairband playlist, and we were listening to Winger 17.
Yeah, right.
Have you listened to the lyrics of this song? Daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me.
Oh, my.
Like, I know.
It's like the rapiest
song. That's
his
defense in court.
Yeah.
I always love when society says no, but my cock says yes. Like, my balls doesn't check ID.
Right?
Yeah. I know. I was just working with Lynch, and we're working on a statutory rape rock chapter for the new thing. But this'll be in there. It's also, you know, theoretically, you only miss by one day. Like, her birthday could be tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, when you're writing
legal.
This song, you could just say 18.
Yeah.
And no one would ever go, oh, why are you with an old pig?
Yeah, an old broad. The old ball and chain.
First semester in junior college, she's all used up and spent. I want some fresh pussy. Like, what?
17. I know you love like you've never seen. She's only 17.
I've now realized why I've never liked the hair bands. I've never been loaded. I'm starting to enjoy this now because I feel like I'm in a strip club.
Turn it up.
Adam's like, pass me some more of that Maker's Mark. Yeah.
That Maker's Mark is making Winger sound pretty good about now.
Oh, man.
All right.
So, yeah, this one, 70. Like I said, it's finished. They put the French oak in there. It's virgin French oak, so that would not make it into
Speaking
a Winger song.
Yeah,
and they let that go for 9 more weeks. And I think anybody who's familiar with the Maker's Mark profile, you're also getting a little bit more of a, like a, I hate to say it, but more of a woodsy quality to it because of that. It's a little bit spicier, I think, this one than the regular Maker's Mark.
It's really good.
$39.99.
Oh, wow.
$39.99, Maker's Mark 46.
And you can get it.
Everywhere.
You can get it like Trader Joe's and that kind of stuff.
Maker's Mark. I mean, any liquor store is going to have Maker's Mark. And now we'll move on to our final entry of the evening.
It's very mysterious.
And this one is not able to. I'm going to have to do the big demonstration here. Hold on.
Did I pass? Oh, no, I drank mine.
Oh, yeah, never mind.
Screw that. Winger, whoever that was, got me going.
Now, Dan's opening a casket.
Mm.
Wow, yes. Wow, that is beautiful.
Okay. Beautiful bottle. It's got the computer the plug boss in the top.
Act like I'm on this show.
The boss hog.
Okay, this one is special. It's a Whistle Pig.
Mm-hmm.
This is a straight rye whiskey. They do this expression called the boss hog in whiskey circles. This is like the domain Romani Conti in the wine world, Adam. You know, it's hard to get this. This is $500 a bottle.
Damn.
Boss hog is the term for the creme de la creme.
Well, they're proprietary. Because of the brand's Whistle Pig, and they have pigs on the farm. Mm-hmm. So Boss Hog was a pig. Was the big pig on the farm.
Hated them.
That's where this came from.
That's right.
This one just came out. Came out this week. You will not be able to get this unless you want to go on the secondary market and spend a lot of money for it. Or I bring it in and leave it for you, which I will do. I'm going to do it. I'm going to leave it with you guys.
Really?
This one's called the Samurai Scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the reason I need this, because I need to see this thing. The reason they do the Samurai Scientist is what they're doing aging-wise with this is 16-year-old straight rye whiskey, okay? Then they finish it in these barrels from Japan that it's called a Misho. It's like a plum wine, plum liqueur.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
11-year-old, it's very sweet. They're finishing it in those barrels. This hasn't been done before over here. And it's kind of a very unique thing. Now, I'm going to warn you, this is probably about 100 and... not probably about. It's 120.5 proof.
All right.
So that's 60%
alcohol.
Plus?
Yeah.
Wow, that's...
Light it on fire.
There we go.
Hit me.
Adam, these are selling for $1,000 online right now.
Oh, really? Well, sorry, losers, but this is coming home with Daddy.
Understandable.
After this, we'll be listening to...
Oh, you're sending this on down?
She's sexy and... Or was it? You're 16, you're beautiful in your mind?
Your mind.
Yeah, we're
going
to keep moving down. Here we go. All right, there we go. There's...
Oh, my goodness.
True story on the cruise this year. You know, they have all the liquors and everything at one of the bars, and I'm into bourbon now because of our trip to, Kentucky. I'm feeling it. Mine is that
Oh,
one.
Sorry.
And I said to the bartender, I'm like, what do you got for bourbon? She kind of points. She goes, what this?
I was just saying the kissing potion. Sorry.
And a listener sitting next to me just goes, get the Whistle Pig. Trust me. It's not this stuff, obviously, but it's the regular. It was my favorite of the whole trip. I drank it the entire trip.
Mm. Yeah.
All right. Let's see what's to write home about here.
Well, I'm smelling. It already smells very sweet.
Yeah. Kind of like berries.
I go easy on this one, I'm telling you.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Powerful.
I mean, there's so much going on in there.
And that tells a story. That has a beginning, middle, and end.
It's like smoky caramel.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to put it... Try dropping a little bit of water in there, just a couple of drops. You just put a little bit in there, and you're going to see what that'll do.
Hold on. Oh, it was already out. I don't even know it sometimes.
Yeah. So...
All right. Couple of drops.
Yeah.
Just a couple of drops.
All right.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
What that does is smooths out the alcohol a little bit, and now you're really going to get those flavors. You're really going to get them there. And what are you getting, Gina? What are you getting? What are you tasting?
It's not easy to pinpoint what I'm tasting. It's very complex. It's very interesting.
She's wasted. Don't listen to her.
But I know what I know, and I know I love you.
It tastes like Kimmel's balls.
It's hard to pick out a flavor in this. It really is. It
tastes like Fallon's balls.
Yeah.
Let me see. Yes, it's great.
It's delicious.
I mean, it's so interesting. I always feel just sort of like not good enough for the good stuff. Yeah. I feel like it's a little bit, dog eating filet mignon.
Aren't you thinking like there's whiskey lovers who would go crazy for this? And I'm like, this is really good. But like there was whiskey lovers who were like, oh, I can't believe you're drinking that.
This tastes like sitting on a 100-year-old tree stump next to a crick.
A little black licorice?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of that going on. Here's the thing about something like
Star
this.
Anise?
I think anybody that's a fan of adult beverages, if you've got the means to do it, I think it's nice to have one really good bottle in your home bar,
because
doesn't it feel good when people come over and you kind of go, you can bust it out, because there's a story for every bottle as well.
Yeah.
You can bust it out and you go, oh yeah, this old thing here.
I stole that from the Adam Carolla show.
That's a good note. Give us a couple of attainable, obviously the Boss Hog's unattainable for most of us, but like what's a good one we could find at, BevMo or whatever.
I mean, look, all of the
you know what you're doing.
I'll let you think for a second. I'm going to tell you first what Matthew McConaughey would have to say about this. Are you ready? Here we go. Oh, yeah. He's just walking and thinking about
powerful,
this.
Powerful.
But you could tell.
I got the message.
He's just thinking about Bostock more than any words could ever describe. I'll buy you a second. I'll do a Castrol Edge.
Okay.
Stronger under pressure. Yeah. So a couple, let's see, three bottles under $50 a bottle, Brian.
More than the $50 range. You're trying to impress me.
Yeah, I don't care if it's $53.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have one that's, you know, one or two or three that says, I know what I'm doing here.
Okay.
Okay. Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Three times!
Three times, fool!
Stronger against breakdown than leading full synthetic oils. It is the best. It is Castrol Edge, formulated in ways to exceed the industry standards. It is Castrol Edge. All right, Dan, what do you got?
So bourbons that I like... If we'll stick to America, not just bourbon, American whiskey. I mean, Woodford Reserve, you probably get a good Woodford Reserve in the $50-$60 range. Eagle Rare, I think, is a very good bourbon that you can get for under $100. What are you looking to spend, Brian? You want to go $150, $200?
This is for the people. But if you're going to have one bottle that was sort of a conversation piece around the house,
besides the Boss Hog?
Yeah, but you want to go $100
around $100, yeah.
Okay, we'll go Wild Turkey, the Reserve. The Wild Turkey Reserve, they put it out every year. It's a different expression. I think that's probably about $150 a bottle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can get it. That's it. Here's the other thing about a lot of these whiskeys. You hear about Pappy Van Winkle.
Of course.
You can't get them, right?
And
is Pappy Van Winkle worth $3,000?
I talked to Chris Morgan, Fast and Furious guy, neighborhood guy, and he said, like, I went into the neighborhood liquor store, like the Vendome or something, and I buy stuff that was, I don't know, $200, and I went back like 3 months later and I went like $800 for it. This is a couple of years ago, but they just went, the market just went nuts.
They only, you know, they're only making so much of this, and now that it's gotten so big, and it's a competition in a lot of ways, it's not necessarily reflective on how good the whiskey is, and I'm not knocking Pappy Van Winkle. It's delicious, and if anybody wants to send me a bottle, I'll take it. But it becomes more about, it's like trying to get your kid in the best school, you know? Is your kid really going to be a fucking idiot if he doesn't go to the absolute best school, if he goes to the second best? But I got to get him in that school. And
right.
It becomes the same thing with collectors of whiskey. They're like, no, I got to have that bottle. Like Boss Hog's one of those where people are like, you know, they're fighting to get it. People line up. There are stores, they announce that they're going to have this, that they'll have three or four bottles. And I've read stories about guys that have gone out a week before with a tent.
Wow.
I'm not joking. To get some of this stuff.
And rich man, poor man.
Question about when you're spending a good chunk of change on something, whether it's olive oil or red wine or this, where's the sweet spot? Where's the window in terms of enjoy it before it goes bad?
I've had this nightmare, recurring nightmare, where I'm on a plane and the plane's going down and my thought is, fuck, I should have drank that Screaming Eagle.
Yeah.
Like that I'm holding. No, I'm serious. Like I think about, like, in my last moments on earth, I would be thinking about the things that I
were saving
in a cellar somewhere.
Right.
Like, God damn it.
Yeah.
Who's going to take that?
I've
you know,
that
and
thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I kind of feel like I'm not really someone who holds on to things, including relationships.
Feelings
for family members. I think, you just, you know, there's no guarantees, like, right? So drink it.
Or after you open it, what's a general amount of time before it turns?
Oh, wine? I mean, you got 2-3 days.
Or whiskey, you know, anything.
Whiskey's fine.
So you can open it, leave it, open it, and close it? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, maybe 100 years it would taste a little different. But yeah, it's not going to change. Yeah.
All right, we'll put all this stuff up on the website. We'll take a quick break. Dan's going to stick around, right?
Yay.
Stick around. We'll do some news right after this.